Move to question time, and I call Senator Mackenzie.
Thank you. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, Senator Wong. Minister, can you provide a guarantee that there will be no price increases for any models of car, ute or SUV as a result of Labor's family car tax? A simple yes or no will suffice.
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Senator Wong.
What I can guarantee is that Australians will have more choice.
That's right.
And Australians, what I can guarantee is Australians will have access to cars which save them money because they will use less fuel.
That's right.
And what I can also guarantee is that the minister and the departments have gone through an exhaustive consultation process with industry, and as a consequence, there have been changes made to the draft regulations and legislation which the government put out, or the draft policy position. So I think this is an example of a government making sure that there is proper consultation with the sector. A government that listens. I know that that is something that those opposite may not recall ever happening under their government. A government that listens to industry and to consumers and seeks to put in place the most appropriate framework that ensures that Australia does join the many countries of the world as an advanced economy with a standard. Let's remember, we are behind the eight ball, Senator. We are behind the eight ball. Other advanced economies have similar standards. I know that, you know, what happened again is the same thing that happened on any action on climate change in your party room, which is parts of the National Party vetoed it, which is why we are alongside Russia as an economy that doesn't have a standard. That's where you took us. That's where you took us. Well, we want to move on. Consumers want to move on. We want to make sure Australians can choose from a wider range of more efficient modern vehicles, and that they save at the petrol pump. They save at the pump. I mean, this is the key thing, isn't it? You just want to make sure Australians don't get the choice of cars which are actually cheaper to run. Well,
thank
we
you,
do.
Minister Wong. Senator Mackenzie, first supplementary.
I'll take that as a no to that request on guarantee. Minister, can you guarantee that under your new vehicle efficiency standards policy, no car models will be withdrawn from or have their access restricted by automakers? Yes or no?
Minister Wong.
I'm sure that the senator watched the media conference. I'm sure that the senator knows that there will be changes to the fleet that Australia has as a consequence of this standard, and that will occur over time. I'm sure she would also know that, as I think one of the car manufacturers said, we need to get on with it. And do you know why we need to get on with it, Senator? Because you left us where Russia is. That's what happened. You know, we are an advanced economy and we don't have a standard. That puts us out of kilter with the world. Oh, well, it's in. Oh, right. Oh, so, you know, this is wonderful. She's suggesting a longer trajectory. Well, you know what your trajectory was? Flatlining. That's what it was. Flatline for, you know, forever, because Mr. Senator Canavan was always going to veto it. Well, unlike you, we actually want to get things done.
Has expired. Senator Mackenzie, second supplement.
Can't guarantee. As part of the government's press conference, Toyota, standing next to the ministers, said that Labor's revised family car tax is still a big challenge in achieving these ambitious targets, and it would be difficult. Toyota did not give a guarantee on prices and did not give a guarantee on models, just like you, Minister, because they can't. Minister, if there was a scare campaign and it's not a genuine threat to consumers and the auto industry, why has the government decided to backflip on this policy?
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Minister Wong.
If there was a scare campaign. Do you remember when we were going to end the weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
End the
backyard barbecue, end the weekend. I mean, give us a break. You are stuck in the past on this. You are nowhere near where most of the advanced economies in the world are. You are happy to have us when Mr. Putin has Russia in terms of standards.
Let's remember what the car makers have said. You quoted Toyota. We want an emission standard that's basically ambitious, which brings people on the journey and doesn't leave people behind, which is where we are. Which is where we are. I think the amendments have been made. We think the amendments are a positive step forward. You know, like, yes, there is work to do, Senator. You know, there is work to do, and change sometimes actually requires work to be done. But you know what? We don't think being where Russia is on this is a good thing for Australia.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Grogan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. I note that the Albanese Labor government's number one priority is helping Australians with their cost of living in every way we can and addressing inflation. Can the minister please tell the Senate how the government is delivering cost of living relief for all Australians?
Great question. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Grogan for her question. And the senator has spent so much of her working life in so many roles advocating for working people, for disadvantaged Australians, and understands very acutely that people are doing it tough, and what this government can and should do to ensure that we ease the cost of living for Australians. And of course, our cost of living tax cuts will deliver a bigger tax cut for more Australians. Every single Australian taxpayer, not just some, 84% better off, 90% of women, 98% of young people. We know, unlike those opposite, aspiration isn't just something that belongs to the top tax bracket. And we on this side want Australians to earn more and to keep more of what they earn. And this week, the government will make its submission to the Fair Work Commission's annual wage review, and we will recommend that the commission ensures that the real wages of Australia's low-paid workers don't go backwards. Don't go backwards. The alternative, President, is those opposite who want Australians to work longer for less. And of course, that wonderful quote machine said, Barnaby Joyce said, raising the minimum wage was window dressing.
That's right.
Window dressing. I mean, what sort of out of touch perspective is someone who reckons that a wage rise for the lowest paid workers in Australia is window dressing? Doesn't matter. Well, you have to really be pretty out of touch to think that that is the case. Those opposite have spoken with pride about keeping wages deliberately low, claiming it's a feature of their economic policy. Well, yes, seriously, Senator Rustin, that is what you have said. That is what your leader and finance minister said, and I was sitting across the table. So seriously, where are you when it comes to low-paid workers?
Time for answering has expired. Senator Grogan, first supplementary.
Thank you. President, it's less than 2 years since the Coalition's decade of denial and delay has come to an end. Can the minister outline what the Albanese Labor government has done to improve the lives of Australians in that time?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
We understand that the importance
Senator
of delivering
Rustin.
Cost of living relief on those opposite. And Senator Rustin keeps interjecting and seems to forget that she was on the side that voted for higher energy prices. She was the side that voted against making sure energy prices people were given relief on energy prices. She's on the side that voted, and she was particular. You were particularly loud in that debate, or in front of that debate. You wanted more expensive medicines. You voted against
cheaper medicines.
So, Senator Rustin, if you want to keep yelling at me,
Senator Wong, remind
everybody.
I remind you to direct your answers to the chair, and I will call others to order, particularly on my left, Minister.
Thank you, President. Well, if Senator Rustin wants to keep interjecting, as is her wont, it might be good for everyone to remember all of the campaigns she's been for, which were about making cost of living worse for Australians, making the cost of living worse for Australians. Well, Senator Grogan, we take a different view on this tide. I know you take a different view, and that's why we are investing in Medicare, we are investing
in
bulk billing and cheaper medicines.
Thank you, Minister. Time for answering has expired. Senator Grogan, second supplementary.
I thank the minister for that answer. I've spoken to many people in my home state of South Australia who've warmly welcomed the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts and the work that we've done to help Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. Can the minister please inform the Senate what responses the government's tax cuts have received more broadly?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Wong.
Well, thank you, President. And Senator Grogan would know that we went out and we spoke to Australians and we said to them, look, we are changing our position because it's the right thing to do. And we are doing it because we understand the cost of living is biting and we want to deliver bigger, better tax cuts to more Australians. Bigger and better tax cuts to more Australians. And we want to make sure that more women and more workers on average incomes get a better share of the tax cuts. And I know that was very hard for the opposition to stomach. It was very hard for the opposition to stomach. I mean, their gut reaction was to oppose these tax cuts. You might remember what Ms. Lee said about this, that they were going to roll them back. Roll them back. We're going to have rollback of the tax cuts. And now Senator Hume is still talking about going back to the drawing board. Well, you know, what are Australians supposed to understand? That the Coalition, which has always wanted a very different set of tax cuts, always wanted a low-wage policy, a low-wage approach to policy.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Bragg.
Very much. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. I refer to recent reporting in the Financial Review that new housing supply will soon hit the lowest levels in a decade. Are higher interest rates and punitive new industrial relations laws hurting or helping the housing construction sector?
Minister Gallagher.
Can you get me the housing stump? Thank you, and I thank Senator Bragg for the question. And I tell you what hasn't helped housing is the Commonwealth not having a policy on it for 10 years. That's when they were in government. I'll tell you what hasn't helped the housing shortage is a migration system that was broken under Mr Dutton and has required fixing. And I'll tell you what else hasn't helped housing and the housing shortage is the skills shortage that we have after years of failure to invest in vocational education and training, something we were also fixing. I also tell you what something that's not helping is those opposite continuously opposing every measure that we try to put in place to address housing supply, like the Housing Australia Future Fund, for example, where we get an ongoing stream of funding going into social and affordable housing, or some of our other initiatives, whether it be help to buy, build to rent, all of those that you are opposed to. So we have an enormous amount of investment going into housing. We recognise that not enough has been done, particularly over the last decade, when the only answer to the housing shortage was to ransack his super in order to pay for a deposit, which would have directly increased the cost of housing. And we are getting on with the job. We are getting on with the job with building houses, whether it be social and affordable housing or getting people into home ownership, or the work that National Cabinet is doing around renters' rights, acknowledging that a large part of the population are renting now. And so we are doing everything we can. And I would say to Senator Bragg, if he is genuinely interested in housing beyond superannuation for housing, work with us on this to increase supply, to work with the states and territories, to work with local government to make sure that we're doing everything we can to increase housing supply in this country.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Bragg, first supplementary.
Thank you very much. Minister, do you believe that you will ever get to your target of 1.2 million new homes by 2029?
Thank you, Senator Bragg. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, we're proud of setting a target. We are proud of setting a target and then putting everything we can...
Order.
..and then underpinning that with all of the policies that we need
to
drive
Gallagher,
that.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Order on my left. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. Of actually putting the effort in to drive the change that's needed in this country. This did not happen overnight, and I know that I love the fact that those opposite decide that now that they're in opposition, they're going to get interested in housing and housing affordability. When they were in government for 10 years, there was zero interest. There were cuts to the homelessness and housing agreement. There was a withdrawal of the Commonwealth from the housing space. And from day one, we have fronted up
and
said,
Senator
we
Hughes.
Are involved in this, we are prepared to fund it, we have put billions of dollars into driving supply, and we are working to achieve all of those targets. And that involves the private sector, it involves the states
you,
and
Minister.
Territories,
the time
and it
for
involves
answering
the Commonwealth.
Has expired. Senator Bragg, second supplementary.
Minister, the Labor government's policy appears to have one central aim, which is to get the super funds to own the houses in Australia. Why is the government so preoccupied by its own vested interests rather than developing creative solutions? Sorry, I can't hear myself over
Order.
The din here. Why is the government so preoccupied with your favourite vested interests rather than trying to find. Sorry, it's hard to hear. President.
Senator Bragg, I have called the chamber to order. You're wasting time. Please finish your question.
Why are vested interests more important than the national interest here?
Thank you, Senator Bragg. Minister Gallagher.
What a load of rubbish that question is. What a load of rubbish. Go and have a look. I mean, engage in the debate on the numerous housing policies we have, and I accept that Senator Bragg doesn't like the superannuation industry. I sit in estimates. I listen to him every estimate session, seeking to undermine and attack superannuation. And I do find it interesting that those that seek to undermine superannuation all have superannuation. And they're all prepared to say to everybody else that you should ransack your super, you should ransack your super instead of actually dealing with the housing policy and the measures that need to be put in place to actually drive the change. We have a coordinated plan. It's being led by Julie Collins from the other place. It's being led by the Treasurer. It's being led by the Prime Minister. First Ministers are standing up. Mayors are standing up. Everybody recognises we've got to do more on housing, and this government is prepared to do it.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Shoebridge.
Thank you very much, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs. Right now, Julian Assange's life is hanging by a thread. We know that tonight, Australian time, there'll be a decision from the UK courts on his last appeal. If he's extradited to the United States, the medical evidence is clear. He will likely never return. What is your government doing to obtain his free return home?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President, and thank you to Senator Shoebridge for the question. And he is correct. We do understand that a decision on Mr. Assange's case is expected soon. As you would know, this matter is before the UK courts. I appreciate that Senator Shoebridge has previously made comments that with which we don't agree about our capacity to intervene in legal proceedings of another country, another jurisdiction. And obviously the Australian government cannot do that. I can confirm, however, that the Prime Minister and myself and I have personally raised this issue with both the United States and the United Kingdom. I can confirm that occurred very recently in the last instance, and it has been an ongoing set of representations. The government is also engaging closely with Mr. Assange and his legal team, and we will continue to do this. There is obviously strong interest in this case. There is a depth of community sentiment. The Prime Minister said quite clearly publicly, and I have reiterated that, that we believe that enough is enough and there is nothing to be served by Mr. Assange's ongoing incarceration. We have also ensured that Mr. Assange has been visited by our High Commissioner, Mr. Smith, as I said to you previously, Senator, there is a limit until Mr. Assange's legal processes are concluded on what government can do. As you will recall, a resolution by government was only possible after legal processes had been concluded in a comparable.
Senator Shoebridge, first supplementary.
Thanks, President. Minister, if Julian Assange loses his appeal tonight, what, if any, assurance have you sought from our close friends in the United Kingdom and the United States that he will not immediately be deported to the United States? Are you leveraging our multi-billion dollar AUKUS commitments or any other diplomatic asset to defend the fundamental rights of a citizen?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
We have made representations, and you will recall, Senator, that in relation to the United Kingdom legal proceedings, that we are not in a position to intervene into the legal proceedings of another country. However, we have made clear that our view is that there is nothing more to be served by this matter, Mr. Assange continuing to be incarcerated. And we believe the matter should be brought to an end. I can only indicate to you that we are engaging at a government-to-government level, and the government has also been engaging with Mr. Assange's legal team.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Shoebridge, second supplementary.
Minister, there are global concerns about the precedent this case would set if the USA is able to try a foreign citizen for journalism, with former UN Special Rapporteur on Torture saying, if Julian Assange is convicted, it will be a death sentence for freedom of the press. What assurance will you give Australian journalists that this government will not be bullied by the US into handing over a journalist from Australia for prosecution there?
Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister Wong.
Well, I think that's a hypothetical question and a made-up question. Because there is no Senator Wish-Wilson, would you like to make a speech? Because you always just interrupt the question time.
Senator Wish-Wilson, withdraw that comment. Senator Wish-Wilson, when you withdraw, you stand and you withdraw respectfully.
A withdrawal, President.
Thank you, Minister Wong.
Senator Shoebridge, I mean, you are proceeding from the situation with Julian Assange, where many representations have been made, including publicly, to suggesting that some...
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Hanson-Young.
President, but if Senator Wong could address the question, the answer to the question through the chair and not directly to individual senators, please.
Thank you, Senator Hanson-Young.
Adding some hypothetical about an Australian journalist, which in Australia being extradited to the United States. There is no such case of which I'm aware. And what I would say to you, no, from Australia, but they can't have it both ways. They don't want me to look at them, but they're happy to yell at me. Which one do you want, Senator Hanson-Young? Do you want your men, the blokes, to be able to yell, or do you want me to address through the chair?
Order.
I'm happy to continue.
Minister Wong, I have Senator Shoebridge on his feet. Order. Order across the chamber. I have a senator on his feet. Order. Order. Just a moment, Senator Shoebridge. Senator Shoebridge.
Thank you, President. I'd ask you to draw the minister to her task in question time, which is to answer questions, not ask them. It's out of order.
The minister is answering the question. Thank you, Senator Shoebridge. Minister.
We always advocate for Australian citizens and Australian journalists, and you would have seen that from the actions we have taken since we've been in government.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Polly.
My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. In May 2022, the monthly rate of inflation was 6.1%, and last month it was recorded at 3.4%. Since taking office, the Albanese Labor government has had a consistent focus on reducing inflation and providing targeted relief for the cost of living pressures faced by Australians. Minister, how have the measures delivered by the government to date helped to provide cost of living relief while not feeding inflation? And what economic headwinds continue to persist, which the government is factoring in ahead of the May budget?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President. I thank Senator Polly for the question and for her interest in the upcoming budget. It's an important important part of the parliamentary year. The Treasurer has said, and I think those of us on this side understand, that whilst we're making welcome and encouraging progress against inflation, our fight against it continues and we recognise that people remain under pressure. Quarterly inflation is now around a third of the 2.1% it was when we came to government in May 2022. This is incredibly welcome progress in the time that we've been in government. And as you identified in your question, Senator Polly, monthly inflation is much lower now than what we saw at the election. We will have new monthly inflation numbers tomorrow, but the downwards direction of these numbers is clear. The ABS also made it clear in the data that they have released that our policies on rents, electricity and on our investments in early childhood education have directly reduced inflation by half a percentage point. And this is, goes to the point we've been making about fiscal and monetary policy working together to put downward pressure on inflation. The IMF and the OECD have recognised our inflation-fighting efforts too, and the RBA has confirmed that fiscal and monetary policy are working in the same direction. Real wages are now growing for the first time in nearly 3 years and ahead of the forecasts. They were going backwards by 3.4% at the time of the election. This means that Australians are earning more, and from July 1, our tax cuts mean that they will keep more of what they earn too. And of course, we're doing a range of other investments on top of the tax cuts, whether it be energy bill relief, making medicines cheaper, making it easier to see a doctor, cheaper childcare, building more social and affordable housing, and fee-free rent.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Polly, first supplementary.
President, thank you, Minister, for that good news. Labor's tax cuts will roll out from July 1 this year and form the centrepiece of this government's cost of living relief package. Why is it so important that Australians keep more of what they earn? And why did the government take the decision to provide support to all taxpayers, not just some?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
I wanted to correct the record because I said I meant fee-free TAFE at the end of my previous answer. There's just so many measures that we're doing to alleviate cost of living pressures, and of course rent assistance was another one of those, but I put the two together. The previous government had a policy of keeping wages low. We've taken a different approach. And that you saw that during the election campaign, with the Prime Minister leading the way on making sure we were arguing for wage increases for the lowest paid workers. And now, with our tax changes, all Australian taxpayers will get a tax cut because we want all Australians to keep more of what they earn. Labor's tax cuts will be a centrepiece of the May budget. And of course, we are in a position to provide these tax cuts because of our careful economic management that we have undertaken. I'm proud of the hard work that we've done today. I know those opposite hate it, but gross debt is lower than when the Liberals are in charge. Real spending growth is lower, inflation is lower. We've delivered the first budget surplus in 15 years, and wages are higher.
Senator Polly, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. You and the Treasurer are working hard to finalise the upcoming May budget, so we thank you for your hard work. But I understand that it will be a budget that balances the fight against inflation.
Senator Polly, resume your seat. Order across the chamber. Order. 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 Interjections across the chamber are disorderly. So, Senator Polly, the last I heard was budget. Would you like to repeat from there? Thank you.
I understand it will be a budget that balances the fight against inflation with a need to gear our economy for growth. Why is it crucial that we make the necessary investments and will drive growth in the economy and create more jobs for Australians, unlike those opposite?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Gallagher.
Senator Polly, for that very good question. It's before these are the issues before the ERC, and I do note that the only way to wake up the opposition is to say something nice about what's happening or something good about the economy. All of a sudden, awake they go, whoa, haven't heard a peep out of them, and then, whoa, they're awake. Oh, they just can't bear it, can they? Gross debt lower, real spending growth lower, inflation lower, first surplus in 15 years, wage growth higher, jobs growth higher. That really gets them going. Labor is the party of good economic management. Our record proves this. Oh, there we go. There we go. They are awake, President. We thought they were all asleep, but they really were awake. They really were awake. These are all the issues that we are focusing on in putting the budget together. Our budget will be a budget for the times. It will have those tax cuts getting to every taxpayer, and we'll look at other sensible investments where it's affordable
Thank
and
you,
able
Minister,
to do so.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Order. Order. As Senator Ciccone, it is not appropriate to bang the desk either. Senator David Pocock.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. Minister, the government has spoken at length about cost of living issues facing Australians, but our frontline community organisations, from food pantries to community and women's legal centres, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander legal services, family and domestic violence services and housing advocacy bodies, are bearing the brunt of this cost of living crisis. They're seeing skyrocketing demand for their services, services that not only provide life-saving and life-changing support to people in need, but also save the government money through early intervention and diversion from the criminal justice system, or helping women get out of violent relationships. The same organisations are saying that they are extremely stressed about their funding and it's about to fall off a cliff. Will the government commit to renewing funding for essential frontline community services in the next federal budget?
Thank you, Senator David Pocock. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Pocock for the question and for his interest in this area. This, of course, is an area of priority for the government. As Finance Minister, when I came in, we did an assessment of the indexation arrangements that existed for the community organisations. They'd been inadequately indexed for a substantial period of time, and in the last budget, I think the largest measure, or it was an estimate, might have been a measure, I'm just trying to get the recollection, but the most significant investment was made into the community sector to deal with the ability to meet wage increase and other costs. Minister Rishworth has also provided additional investment into the health and the wellbeing and capability grants program, which goes directly to some of those emergency providers of food relief. We will continue to work with the community sector as we have. I've got a good relationship with ACOS and other peaks that I meet with pretty regularly, as do other ministers, about prioritising further investments. I'm aware of the community legal service issues, and again, they have been, they have, I think, been operating on very low funding for the work that they do for some time. The attorney has had a review into that. That work is before government, but we absolutely see our role with the community sector as a partnership, and we work closely with them. In terms of some of the funding, some of those grants fundings are time limited. Some of them go through a procurement process. So your question about committing funding, I'm not in a position to do that today, but our focus has been on extra support for the community organisations through direct engagement with them, and that's the way we will continue to engage with them.
Thank you, Minister. Senator David Pocock, first supplementary.
Minister, the government's been prepared to make plenty of funding commitments already before the budget, and a whole range of other things, whether it's $4.6 billion for Rolls-Royce, or $40 million to advertise and sell the statutory tax cuts. Why won't you commit to ongoing funding for community legal services, for food banks? What have they got to do? They're helping so many Australians, and yet you can't actually make a commitment to fund them.
Senator Gallagher.
I think I answered that. I mean, if there's a procurement process underway, ministers do not get involved in that. Where community organisations have long and ongoing funding arrangements, we have not been focused on not renewing those or any other process. So I'm not really sure about what you mean about not committing to funding. We have been working in partnership with them. And we will continue to do so. We've made extra investments, billions of dollars, in the indexation arrangements that went to community organisations, and I've actually had pretty positive feedback around that, allowing them to pay adequate wages to their workers now that they are getting properly indexed, and those indexation arrangements will continue. That's probably the single biggest investment made in the community sector in more than a decade has been that commitment we did in last budget. On the other point, governments have to do a range of things. Yes, we have to look after our national security, we have to look after the community sector, we have to look after the health system, and that's what the budgets
thank you,
are
Minister.
All about.
Senator Pocock, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Minister, to your point about indexation, funding for Women's Legal Centre receives, under the NLAP agreement, indexation of 1.6% this financial year. the cost to employ a mid-level solicitor has jumped 27%. How are they meant to provide Australians in need services where the government crows about indexation of 1.6% when their fees are going, their costs are going through the roof?
Thank you, Senator Pocock. Minister.
Yes, under the NLAP, they are not covered by the indexation arrangements that we addressed in last budget, and that is because it's under this other partnership agreement. But I am aware of that agreement. I've been talking with the attorney. It's work that is before government. Unfortunately, those opposite believed indexation arrangements of 1% or 1.2%. If you worked in the APS, you got a wage increase of about 1.2% on average over the last decade, was an adequate way to index. Well, it was lower than inflation, Senator Rustin, much lower than inflation. 1.2% per annum is much lower than inflation. So there was inadequate indexation. There was a reluctance to fund community services properly, and we are methodically working through all of those issues and addressing them at every budget. And we have been working in partnership with the community sector on that.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Vann.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister of Climate Change, Senator Wong. Minister, the Paris Agreement's central aim is to strengthen global response to the threat of climate change. It is imperative that Australia's commitments and policies align with these goals. A watered-down new vehicle emissions standard will have significant implications for Australia's ability to meet these targets. Today we read that Ministers King and Bowen will be unveiling a softened new vehicle efficiency standard. The original standard was a goal of 60% reduction of new car emissions by 2029. Is the Minister able to specify the revised emission reduction target for new vehicles by the year 2030?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, Senator, and I appreciate the question, and you are certainly correct in it, outlining the way in which a trajectory to net zero requires a contribution from all parts of the economy. And I, if I may, congratulate you on actually dealing with the reality of the policy challenge that the country faces, the economic transition the country faces, which is in stark contrast to what occurred under the previous government over 9 years. It is true that when you have less abatement from one sector, it does require more abatement from another sector. Having said that, the ministers have obviously had to take into account the engagement with industry, the engagement with stakeholder representatives in making the decision about some revisions or amendments to the policy which was proposed. And I understand, although I wasn't able to see it, that the ministers did announce that prior to question time. That included recategorising some four-wheel drive from passenger to light commercial vehicle, smoothing the emissions trajectory for light commercial vehicles, which reflects the adjustments announced by the United States to its vehicle standards, and smooths the transition for utes, vans and others, adjusting emissions limits and staging implementation in partnership with industry. So the standard will commence in January 25, but manufacturers will not begin earning credits or penalties until after 1 July 25. You ask a very good question, which is about the data as to projected abatement as a consequence of this decision compared to the previous standard. I don't have that information in the brief that's been provided to me, but it's a reasonable question. I'll take advice on
it. The time for responding has expired. Senator Vann, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. And the Minister might need to take this one on advice too. How do the adjustments to the NVES, how do they compare to the old one? What is the new one compared to the old one? And you may want to take that on notice.
Thank you, Senator Vann. Minister.
Well, I can go through what was publicly said about some of the changes. As I said, because there's a lot of discussion about four-wheel drives, there was a recategorisation of a limited number of four-wheel drives from passenger car to light commercial vehicle. This includes models such as the Land Cruiser and the Nissan Patrol. This acknowledges that some off-road wagons use similar ladder frame chassis and need comparable towing capacity above 3 tonnes to dual cab utes. There's a smoothing of the emissions trajectory for light commercial vehicles. As you might recall, Senator, I think it was yesterday, I was asked about, I think by Senator McKenzie, about the changes in the US the US EPA's vehicle standard. This change reflects that. There was an adjustment to the weight-based relative emissions limits, which is known as the break point, which recognises that heavier vehicles emit more, and there was staged implementation. The cumulative abatement, I'm advised in the fact sheet, is 20 million tonnes to 2030 and 80 million to 2035.
Time. Thank you, Minister. Senator Vann, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Considering the urgency of addressing climate change and the role of diplomatic leadership in fostering international collaboration, how does the government anticipate the adjustments to the NVES will affect Australia's diplomatic relations, specifically concerning our Pacific Island neighbours and other nations that are exceedingly susceptible to the impacts of climate change?
Thank you, Senator Vann. Minister Wong.
Thank you, Senator. Well, it is true that climate change is the first priority of Pacific Island nations, and I had the opportunity today to meet with the Deputy Prime Minister of Vanuatu, and that was a point he again made, and you're right, and to identify it as an issue. There's no change to our overall target. Obviously, what we are looking at is how each sector can contribute to the targets we have announced and to targets that we will be announcing down the track in accordance with the Paris Agreement. What I would say is this model will deliver $95 billion in fuel savings to Australians by 2050. It will deliver more choice of low and zero emissions vehicles. It will deliver cumulative abatement of, as I said, 20 million tonnes to 2030, 80 million tonnes to 2035, and 321 million tonnes to by 2050. It will reduce emissions intensity for new
Thank you, Minister. The time for responding has expired. Senator Thorpe.
Thank you. My question is for the Minister representing the Attorney General. Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Legal Services funding is still stretched to breaking point. There are just 15 months to go until the current funding agreement expires. First Nations legal staff advised the government about needing $229 million in emergency funding to address staff recruitment, retention and urgent capital works. Will the government deliver this funding in the May budget?
Thank you, Senator Thorpe. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Thorpe. Obviously, I'm not in a position to disclose announcements that the government may make in the context of this year's budget. Sitting this close to the finance minister, that would be a very dangerous thing to do, to reveal those kind of things. But certainly the government does acknowledge that there are some very real issues around legal aid funding, including to Aboriginal legal services in the way that you've described. And as I understand it, the Attorney-General has commenced a review surrounding these issues. No doubt once that review is completed, he will be in a position to say more about that. But what we are doing in the meantime is fulfilling an election commitment by designing and implementing a National Justice Reinvestment Program, which will provide $79 million to support community-led justice reinvestment initiatives. The government opened applications for the National Justice Reinvestment Program and the Justice Reinvestment in Central Australia program in September 2023. In the first cycle...
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Thorpe.
Point of order on relevance. I wasn't asking about the non-reinvestment of the reinvestment, because it's not reinvestment.
Senator Thorpe, you need to make a point
of order. Can we stick to what the question is? And that is, are you going to fund these legal services, or are you just going to talk the crap that you always do?
Senator Thorpe. Senator Thorpe, withdraw that comment, please. Thank you. Senator Thorpe, the minister is being relevant. He has spoken about the budget, and I'll give him the call again. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. Senator Thorpe, I have answered your question by saying that we're not in a position to describe what will be included in this year's budget, whether it be in this space or any other space. But as I say, we do understand there are some very real issues in this area, and that is why we are undertaking this action. So as I was saying, in the first cycle of the Justice Reinvestment Programs, 9 initiatives have been selected for funding and applications remain open year round. So we are clearly committed to this by having put in place $79 million already to support those community-led justice reinvestment initiatives.
Senator Thorpe, first supplementary.
The Attorney-General commissioned an independent review, as you say, of the National Legal Assistant Partnership, which he received several weeks ago, but has not published it publicly. Yet, despite calls from stakeholders and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander legal services. So why is the government withholding vital information from the sector that they are supposed to be working in genuine partnership with? What are you hiding?
Thank you, Senator Thorpe. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Thorpe. Well, I don't think it is fair to accuse the Attorney-General of hiding a report that he only received 3 weeks ago. And it's understandable that he and the government more broadly would take a little bit of time to consider the recommendations of that review before either releasing it or announcing what our response to that review will be. But as I say, the Albanese government recognises the pressures that these services are under, and we also recognise the importance of strengthening the legal assistance sector. We recognise that legal assistance is essential to ensuring access to justice and equality before the law for all Australians, including our first Australians. That's exactly why the Attorney-General commissioned the review of the National Legal Assistance Partnership between the Commonwealth and all states and territories. As I say, this review report was received on the 5th of March, and it's now being considered by federal, state and territory Attorneys-General.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Thorpe, second supplementary.
Well, that's not a partnership. Will the government commit to releasing the report before the end of this week to show that they are willing to work in genuine partnership, not lip service, with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander legal services?
Thank you, Senator Thorpe. Minister Watt.
Well, thanks, President. Well, it's obviously a matter for the Attorney-General to determine whether he will release this report and, if so, when that will occur. I'm not going to commit another minister to releasing a report by the end of this week. But I think the mere fact that the Attorney-General has commissioned this independent review of the National Legal Assistance Partnership shows good faith on his part and shows that the Albanese government understands the pressures that Aboriginal legal services are under. If my recollection serves me correctly, the Attorney-General himself has worked in Aboriginal legal services in the past.
Order.
Well, I think that's actually...
Senator Thorpe, order. Minister, please continue.
Well, I think the fact that the Attorney-General has taken the time in his career to work in Aboriginal legal services does demonstrate that he believes in them and supports them, and that's the practice that he's continuing now as the Commonwealth Attorney-General.
Thank you. Senator Stewart.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Senator Watt. Since taking office, our government, the Albanese Labor government, has been focused on getting wages moving and easing cost of living pressures, in contrast to those opposite who support a race to the bottom on wages. How is the government's approach to the Fair Work Commission's annual wage review helping ensure Australian workers earn more and keep more of what they earn?
Thank you, Senator Stewart. Yeah. Minister Watt.
Thanks for the question, Senator Stewart. And as you may have noticed, there is no limit to how many times we will talk about the actions of the Albanese government to ensure that Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. This is something that opposition senators are going to need to get used to for the remainder of this term. We are going to talk about it over and over again because it's something that so many Australians are looking forward to. To help Australians earn more, the Albanese Labor government has consistently backed low-paid workers through the annual wage review in 2022, 2023 and now in 2024. What a contrast to the nearly 10 years of coalition government that we had, with a government that refused to actively engage itself in the Fair Work Commission's decisions about the minimum wages, And no wonder, therefore, that we saw wage suppression in this country, especially for low-paid workers, for the nearly 10 years that they were in office. And it is a good thing that we now, under a Labor government, the Albanese Labor government, have a government prepared to roll its sleeves up, put forward submissions, put forward an argument to the Fair Work Commission, as we have done each year we have been in office. And as a result of that action, the minimum wage for a full-time worker in Australia now is now $110 higher than when we took to office. Now, we understand that low-paid workers, more than anyone in our community, are feeling the pinch from cost of living pressures. And how much worse off would they be if we hadn't taken the action that we took to support a wage rise for the minimum wage, and that is now bearing fruit with people receiving $110 more than what they were receiving when we took office. The same approach, and they don't like it. They don't like a government getting involved and fighting for fairer wages for workers. The same approach that we've taken this year, a submission to the Fair Work Commission that the wages...
Senator, order. Senator Rennick.
Please clarify, is that $110
Senator
per week, fortnight, or
year?
That is
not a point of order.
Well, just wanting to know, you're saying 100...
Order. 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 Minister Watt.
Thanks, President. It is an unfortunate thing to have been a senator for nearly 5 years and only get a chance to speak when you interject. Senator Rennick never gets a question,
Minister.
He only ever interjects.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Stewart, first supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Minister, for that answer.
Order. Order. Order across the chamber. Order. I have Senator Stewart, who was on her feet. Senator, please ask your first supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Minister, for that response. Given that the Liberals and Nationals have suggested that asking for a real pay rise for low-paid workers is just window dressing, why is the Albanese Labor government fighting for a pay rise for low-paid workers?
Minister Watt.
Thanks, Senator Stewart. Well, it's pretty straightforward. The Albanese Labor government is fighting for a pay rise for our low-paid workers because it's the right thing to do for people who've been hit hardest by the rising cost of living. But it is becoming increasingly clear with every passing day that the Coalition have a different approach, because we saw Senator Hume tell Sky News that the Labor government... Get this, Senator Hume, talk about Sherlock Holmes. She told Sky News that the Labor government wants minimum wages to go higher as a cost of living measure. Senator Hume is onto us. She's worked it out. She's worked out that a Labor government wants minimum wages to go higher as a cost of living measure. Well done, Senator Hume. You might earn yourself a mug as a reward for working that out. Or we've also seen the member for New England, Mr Joyce, who in his latest comeback tour to become the leader of the rabble of the National Party, he's out there every week telling Sunrise that arguing for a real pay increase for low-paid workers is window dressing. We know that's the way to
Minister.
Get votes in the National
thank
Party
you,
room
Minister.
By
the
talking about that.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Stewart, second supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Minister, for that response. I note that the Liberals and Nationals have committed to a targeted repeal of the government's workplace relations reforms to restore the low-wage economic settings that they support. How have the Albanese Labor government's decisions and actions helped reverse the pattern of wage stagnation while getting more Australians into jobs?
Thank you, Senator Stewart. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Stewart. Well, our government is fighting every day to ensure Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. I reckon by the end of this term we can have coalition senators saying that. Repeat after me, coalition senators. The Labor government will ensure that Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. It's pretty straightforward. We know you believe it because you voted for our tax cuts. So you must agree that a Labor government delivers Australians the ability to earn more and keep more of what they earn. Because, of course, we remember Senator Cash, and I haven't mentioned her in question time for a while, so let's give her another go. She said that our measures would close down Australia. Close down Australia. By letting Australians earn more and keep more of what they earn. We had the member for banks
Order.
Say that the Secure Jobs Bill was a grotesque piece of legislation.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Gallagher.
Order. I'm sitting next to the minister and I cannot hear his answer. I would just ask that those opposite just stop
interjecting. Thank you, Minister Gallagher. Order. I'm trying my very best to keep order in the chamber. Minister, please continue.
Thank you, President. I'll just have to turn up the volume, I guess. Now, the Shadow Treasurer has now also confirmed that they will take a targeted package of repeals to the next election. Every Australian
you,
worker
Watt.
Has a target on their back
thank
under the
you,
coalition.
Minister Watt. Senator Fawcett. Order. Senator Fawcett.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. Earlier today, some of Australia's allies have publicly called out the Chinese Communist Party for malicious cyber activity attributed to groups sponsored by the Chinese government targeting democratic institutions. In response, the UK and the US sanctioned a front company and two individuals who are complicit in this behaviour. The United States government also revealed that thousands of American citizens have been targeted in a prolific hacking operation for which seven Chinese individuals face charges. What action has the Australian government taken in support of our allies who have been subject to these cyber attacks?
Thank you, Senator Fawcett. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Senator, I'm a little confused. I shouldn't say that because then somebody over there will say something rude. But. Bemused by your question because it suggests that we haven't done anything, and I would have thought, given your how much of an avid follower of these matters you are, you would have seen that we did take the unusual step of issuing a public statement. Senator Rustin, you really have a difficulty in listening to me, don't you? I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but that is my job. I'm supposed to answer the question.
Order. Order across the chamber. Order. 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 Senator Fawcett has asked a serious question, which Senator Wong was answering. Interjections across the chamber, or indeed to Senator Wong when she's answering the question, are disorderly. I would ask all senators to allow Senator Wong to focus on the question that was asked and to listen in silence. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. And it is a serious issue, and Senator Fawcett would know that there have not been many occasions in which the Foreign Minister of Australia and the Home Affairs Minister have issued an attribution in relation to cyber that names the particular entities or country concerned, and we did so. And we did so, obviously, in consultation with our friends in the United Kingdom and other members of the Five Eyes. And we did so because it is important that when it comes particularly to China, state-backed actors targeting democratic institutions and parliamentarians, that we do make clear that this is a line for all of us, that we want that our resilience and our sovereignty do require respect for our democratic institutions. So you would have seen, I hope, what we said, which was the Australian government joins the United Kingdom and other international partners in expressing serious concerns about malicious cyber activities by state-backed actors targeting UK democratic institutions and parliamentarians. The persistent targeting...
Thank you, Minister. Senator Fawcett, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. And Minister, I do welcome the government's willingness to join in that attribution, which is important in preserving democracies. But my supplementary question is, will the minister now commit to using the powers under Australia's Magnitsky-style thematic sanctions regime to stand with our allies in sanctioning those individuals responsible for this behaviour?
Thank you, Senator Fawcett. Minister Wong.
Well, I would make the point that sanctions, firstly, we don't discuss or telegraph any consideration of sanctions in any circumstances. The second point I would make, and I appreciate that in opposition, you are free to take a different view, but I think governments have to always think very carefully about what is the appropriate measure to take in relation to situations of international concern. There are occasions where sanctions are imposed. They are rarely our first choice.
they should be used judiciously, and they are usually used in conjunction with other response measures. What I would say to you, Senator, is all of us here are united in our belief that any government, of Australia and the Parliament of Australia, should always ensure we protect our democratic institutions.
Sorry, Minister, time for answering has expired. Senator Fawcett.
Thank you, President, and Minister, again welcoming the commitment of Australia to recognise and make that attribution. How does the Australian government respond to the denials from Beijing which reject the validity of these attributions?
Thank you, Senator Fawcett. Minister Wong.
I simply repeat the statement that was issued this morning by the Home Affairs Minister and myself. What I would also say to you, and I think it is important, given I've been asked about this, to make clear to the Chamber that the advice is that Australia's electoral systems were not compromised by the cyber campaigns targeting the United Kingdom, that the Australian Cyber Threat Report illustrates that both state and non-state actors continue to ensure intent and capability to compromise Australian networks, that the cybersecurity strategy has outlined how the Australian government will protect essential government citizens and ensure our citizens and businesses are better protected from cyber threats. All of us should ensure our cybersecurity systems are hardened and resilient, and we will continue to brief parliamentarians and provide advice on cyber and security matters, including protecting your personal data and mitigating cyber threats. And with that, President, I ask that further questions be placed on notice.